welcome to the Buckmaster Show for this Friday, December the 16th, 2011. Do you believe it? Christmas Eve is a week from tomorrow. That is hard to believe, where this month has gone and where this year has gone. I am Bill Buckmaster, and I thank you for choosing the Buckmaster Show. We are live Monday through Friday, noon to 1 on The Voice, KVOI, AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. And we have The Voice Network, our partners in Douglas, where Cochise County residents listen to the show on 930 AM KAPR. In Gila County and Globe, Eastern Arizonans listen to Buckmaster on KJAA, AM 1240. We have live streaming of the show at buckmastershow.com and KVOI.com. And you now have three venues to choose from for 24/7 anytime listening of our program: buckmastershow.com, tucsonsentinel.com, and tucsoncitizen.com. We get things going on our Friday Focus interview featuring a Southern Arizona newsmaker, and today we welcome Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek, who is with us today. He is the only Republican on the Tucson City Council. Joining me to question Councilman Kasachek are Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com and Jimmy Bogle, editor of the Tucson Weekly. We invite you to join in the conversation, 790-2040. You can submit questions at BuckmasterShow.com or on our Buckmaster Show Facebook page. I want to remind you that Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net. Councilman Steve Kasachek, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Doing very well. We had Ramon Valadez, chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, on the show yesterday. He is hoping the city council will get on board here with this new city courts complex. He basically says that the county's holding up its part of the bargain. What about the city?
Well, there are some serious questions about that project. We have a history in this community. You can talk about Rio Nuevo, we can talk about bond money floating around, of telling taxpayers, telling voters that we're going to do something, and then several years later coming back asking for an excuse me, please, and saying we've spent X amount of money and we haven't quite finished the project. In this case, we haven't quite started the project, and oh, by the way, we need some more money. I understand that this might be a wonderful project at some point. At some point, it also might be needed. The questions that I have simply revolve around how have we spent the money that got us to this point, what happened to the promises that were made to the voters back in 2004, and if I can review them real quickly, in 2004, the voters were offered a $76 million city-county courthouse, fully loaded, complete project. In the bond package, it said that it was going to cost $91 million, but if they couldn't find alternate financing to make up that $15 million delta, they would reduce the scope of the project. In fact, neither one happened. What happened was that the people designing the project blew it up from 335,000 square feet up to 470,000 square feet, then were surprised that they couldn't afford it any longer and started to pull pieces of the project out of it. Now it's 40,000 square feet smaller than what the voters had originally approved. It's going to cost more. They've spent from 76 down to about $30 million. I know they had to do some graveyard remediation. That was about $18 million, which is an interestingly high figure. It is also now, because the Board of Supervisors voted in April of this year to phase this project, it's only a shell, and we don't have a guaranteed maximum price on the build-out, the tenant improvements. We have estimates, but we don't have the final costs. In addition to that, there's a garage associated with this project. We don't have the final cost for that. That's supposed to pay for itself revenues that the garage generates, but we know from Plaza Central and Depot Plaza projects, both garages downtown, that that is hardly a reliable funding source. So my concerns are that the county spent $12 million on upgrades to the Superior Court system. The city wasn't given credit for that. That came out of the bond package. They spent another $24 million buying a bank plaza for their employees. Now, that is not bond money, but it is certainly taxpayer dollars. And, so before coming to the city, 2 days before they allege a GMP for what is now just a shell is going to a guaranteed maximum price is going to expire and say, you guys got to ante up. I think we need to get a little more little more serious about where the original dollars went, what happened to the original scope, and what's a fair price for moving forward.
Steve, this is Mark Evans.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, but a couple of things. One, I think some of the increase in the size of the original project was proposed by the city. That was put up by the city because they wanted more room. And then, two, you know, you think the council would be more agreeable to moving more aggressively and putting up the money for this courthouse if they had to ride in the elevators over there in the city magistrate building, where they're pretty rickety and the building's fairly unsafe? I mean, that's the reason for it, is that where you have your city court right now is a pretty rickety building that's potentially dangerous.
Well, I don't know about potentially dangerous. We've been doing tenant improvements on our own nickel over there. In fact, if the county, one thing I didn't mention is the county wants to charge us a lease in this building. If the city taxpayers are putting up the lion's share of the capital for building the building, why then are we also paying the county lease? If we're the anchor tenant, perhaps they ought to be paying us lease amounts. As far as the expansion of the project is concerned, there were several elements to that. It wasn't just the city asking for the project to expand. Originally, the voters approved $6.2 or $3 million for architectural, engineering, and project management. They've already spent over $11 million. A part of the reason for that is the expanded scope. If you look at the phase two estimate, it's another $12 million. So for what the voters approved at $6 million back in 2004, we're now looking at over $23 million just for AE and project management. There, Mark, are some serious questions about how the money's being thrown around. This isn't monopoly money. This is money that comes out of people's pockets and off of their kitchen tables while they're trying to balance their books. The part about the existing city courthouse, the $12 million that the county took to upgrade the Superior Court building, maybe what we do is look at the $30 million that's left and give the city 60% of that, or 58% of that, which is what the county wants to charge us for in terms of the capital remaining.
Okay,
and that's $17 million, and throw it at the existing city courthouse.
Here's Jimmy Bogle, The Weekly.
Jimmy, hi.
Hey, how you doing, Steve?
Good.
I just wanted to follow up on something you said when you were discussing some of your concerns with the spending up till now. You called the $18 million that was sent on the graveyard work that needed to be done an interestingly high figure, and I was kind of wondering if you would elaborate on that, because I thought that was kind of an interesting statement. So,
well, we have a history in this community of setting line items and then spending to that line item and then over and above. I don't know how many grave sites were moved. I've heard various numbers, but my comment was intended to mean that is an interestingly high amount of money, and before we simply paid in full okay to pay stamp on that thing from the city council's table, I'd like to know what was the process involved. Why does it cost X amount of dollars per body to move them? And I don't know if you guys know how many bodies were moved. Let me know. We'll do the arithmetic here on the air, and we can parse that out a little more.
It was a couple hundred, but I don't remember the
exact
number.
Well, okay, so let's say it's a couple hundred. Let's say it's 1,000. I mean, we're talking over $1 million per body to move, $18 million to move those things.
All right, Steve Kosacek is with us on the Buckmaster Show, the Friday Focus, 12:13 on the Buckmaster Show. And we want to ask Councilman Kosacek a couple of quick questions here before the break. Your endorsement of Richard Carmona, a Democrat, you're a Republican. That raised some eyebrows in Republican circles. Why did you do that?
Look, I have been criticized mightily for that from some of the people in the Republican Party. This is a longer answer than a quick one, but I'll try it, and then we can come back maybe after the break. Richard Carmona is the poster child for what a Republican ought to be supporting, and that is if you want somebody who was born in Harlem, grew up in Harlem, got his GED through the military, served special forces, received two Purple Hearts, a couple of bronze medals, served in the Pima County Sheriff's Office, Bush Administration Surgeon General, I mean, on and on and on. At this point, people are having fun, they're troubled over the word, parsing the word support versus endorse. I would support this man for the U.S. Senate as a senatorial candidate because it is my belief that we need somebody with a history of service and support of Southern Arizona and Pima County and not Mesa. That's what Richard Carmona is. He's an absolute quality guy, full of integrity. I've known him since 1988-89, and I have no problem. I'm just to the point where we need to start looking beyond party labels in the way we're gauging candidates. And if the Republican Party in Pima County wants to reduce to the size of a pup tent, then fine and dandy, but I'm not going to go in that direction.
Speaking of party affiliations, is yours as a Republican safe right now?
It is in my book, but I would, you know, if the Pima County Executive Committee wants to take a formal action, that's of course up to them. But I'm not looking at jumping ship.
Is there room for dissent in the Republican Party anymore, or do you have to toe the line or risk being attacked personally and politically?
I would say, Mark, that it's not just a Republican issue. Certainly, I'm being criticized by people in up in the hierarchy of the Republican Party, but I can tell you that members of the city council were criticized early on in the budget process for supporting some of the motions that I was making. My sense is that this community, forget the state and forget federal, this community would be better served if people would look at issues and candidates on the basis of who they are and what they are, instead of who's proposing a piece of legislation, ordinance, or who's running based on party label. I think that the partisanship is damaging to the whole process of creating good public policy. And so, no, I don't think it's necessarily a Republican thing, although I'm under some scrutiny for that right now. But I can suggest to you that that it cuts across both parties.
12:16 on the Buckmaster Show. We are going to take a break. We will be back with City Councilman Steve Kasacek. Still lots to talk about. Stay with us, Councilman, and we'll be back with you in a few minutes.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain and Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Well, 19 on the Buckmaster Show. Still lots to cover with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek, who is our Friday Focus interview today. Councilman, it looks like Richard Miranda certainly wants the job as city manager. He sounds like a city manager. He acts like one. He was here on the program with us last Friday. Why do the national search? Why not give this gentleman the job?
Well, I agree. Dick is doing he's doing all the right things right now. He's made some changes internally, reshuffled the deck, and got some quality people in some important positions. So I think he's absolutely one of the ought to be one of the top candidates to consider. He knows the lay of the land, and you know his resume. This is a $1.3 billion organization, though, that we're hiring a CEO to run. And so I think we need to at least do our due diligence, let the process play itself out. Make sure that we don't do what we did the last two times and just take the next guy in line and wind up regretting it later on, quite frankly. So I think he's certainly going to be a quality candidate, one that is going to bring a lot to the table in terms of his resume. And right now it looks as though he's doing the right things. But let's go through the process this time. I think the public deserves that. So that we don't keep a revolving door in the city manager's office.
Here's Steve. Mark Evans of the TucsonCitizen.com.
Steve, you said a few months ago that you were getting a little frustrated being on the short end of a lot of council votes, and that you were hoping you'd get some help in the latest election, and you didn't get any. So what are your expectations for the next 2 years of the city council?
First of all, Jonathan Rothschild and I have been meeting for months, and he's been meeting with the rest of the council. He brings to the table an analytic approach. He's an attorney, and he's going to look at issues on a nonpartisan basis. He's going to look at them for what they are. I think we had a good example of that at the last council meeting, where we took a vote on what's called the West University Transition Area, and I won't go into all the weeds of it, but in essence, it's setting up a buffer zone where development can happen along a streetcar next to the university to help ease the problem of mini dorms in historic neighborhoods. And he was asking all the right questions in terms of the process going forward for protecting historic homes and the process going forward for the next step in terms of setting up an urban overlay district and all that. So I'm confident that the mayor-elect is going to be look at issues on analytical and issue by issue basis. The other thing is that we're through the campaign season now, and that's going to take some of the pressure off on some of the other council members who, as we were talking before the break, had some pressure on them to toe a party line and to run as a slate and to not leave the quote reservation, and I think that's going to work well going forward. Karen Ulick and I are often pitted as polar extremes, and in fact you'll find that Karen and I have joined on certain ordinances and pieces of legislation. We're looking at increasing the penalties for red tags. We're looking at the no texting ban together. So there are several items that she and I are coupling up on. So I think that I'm encouraged now that we're beyond the election season. I'm encouraged with the new mayor's approach to things. I think things will be fine.
Steve, you briefly alluded to the streetcar, and in our Get Out of Town issue this week, we actually touched on it a little bit, specifically the fact that all folks, including the Tucson Weekly, that hold events along 4th Avenue and Congress Street are now being told that basically from here on forever and ever, 4th Avenue and Congress Street can no longer be closed for events forever, with the possible exception being the 4th Avenue street fairs. What do you think about this, and is there anything that can be done that, to fix it?
Right, and I share your concern about that. Some of them, for instance, the All Souls procession, there would have to be some restrictions as to height, because of when you've got the electrical wires above, you know, you've seen some of the costumes and those, and you know, they would be absolutely a safety issue. But it strikes me that we are probably, for some of the events that you just mentioned, and including Second Saturdays and the ones you just mentioned, we probably have more people participating in those events for several hours a day than we'd have riding a streetcar. So it strikes me that unless there is a federal funding, we put our federal funding in jeopardy by not making arrangements to allow those events to happen for a few hours. I mean, put the streetcar on hiatus, stop it at one end of the event, and start it again at the other end of the event. It just strikes me that when you have thousands and thousands of people participating in events that have been a part of this community for years and years, we ought to be creative enough to be able to find a way to let them continue to happen for the several days a year that we're talking about. We're not talking about shutting the streetcar down for days and days at a time in terms of, you know, the operations, but we're talking about let's put our heads together and find a way to help make those events continue to work in a safe manner.
Do you think the FDA will let you turn the power off and turn it back on without having to go through recertification?
See, and that's one of the problems, Mark, and you just nailed one of the huge issues, is that you do have to do the recertification. And I go through that in some of the projects I do in the athletics department, is that when you occupy a new building and you have a fire suppression system, you have to recertify this fire suppression system, not just for the room that you just built, but for the whole building. So that's going to be one of the tricky parts of getting through this.
Are you confident that the city's financial worries are at least behind you right now as you enter 2012, Councilman?
To the extent that they were, the last two fiscal years were in better shape. Sales taxes that we are the sales tax numbers that we're seeing right now are better than they have been. We made some pretty significant cuts, so the city's expenditures are way down. Part of that is a result of having laid off several hundred employees, and so we're in a better position in terms of dollars right now, it looks like, going forward. There's always the caveat that what's the state legislature going to do? They've cut HERF dollars, highway user revenue fund dollars, that have hurt our ability to maintain roads here locally, to the tune of several millions of dollars in recent years. They're looking at state shared revenues again. So while one side of the equation looks good, and while the crystal ball is a little bit muddy, there's no way that we can predict what's going to come out of Phoenix in the months ahead, and so that's always a concern.
Speaking of what comes out of Phoenix, of course, there's been an issue in the courts, kind of tied up a little bit, involving whether Tucson should go to ward-only elections or nonpartisan elections. And I just wanted to get your two cents on that. And, you know, it definitely worked out in a very interesting way in the last election, in that if there had been, ward-only elections, you'd actually have a couple of other Republicans with you on the
right.
City Council.
And if you want to roll that tape back one more election, I wouldn't be talking to you. Right.
Exactly,
now.
Exactly.
So, and nor would Rodney Glassman have been elected. So, this is the way I feel about that. First of all, as to the court hearing, the court case, I voted with the rest of the council. This is a city charter issue. The legislature was definitely targeting the city of Tucson. We're the only city in the state that runs ward only in the primary and then at large for the general election. So there is nobody else that they were targeting. If they are so passionate about nonpartisan elections, why don't they do it at the state level? I mean, let's just call it what it is. I mean, so this is yet another attempt by the legislature to dip their pen in the city of Tucson's inkwell and tell us how to do our business. So that it's a charter issue. As to the specific issue itself, I support the process that we have now. Ward only is fine at the primary level, but there are precious few issues that we deal with at the council table, whether you talk about zoning or water or transportation or the budget, as Bill just mentioned, that simply have a ward specific impact. So I think that as long as the ward has an opportunity to select the person they want to go forward into the general, the rest of the city has absolutely the right to weigh in as well. I understand how that would have changed things in the previous elections, but I support the at-large. As far as nonpartisan goes, I guess you all kind of get my take on that now. I'm for throwing party labels aside and let people run on the basis of who they are and what they've done. Just throw your resume on the table, and if you're applying... if you're applying for this job, then let people look at it the same way that they'd look at it if you walked into a door of a private business and said, I'm looking for work.
Councilman Steve Kasachek, thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show. We want to wish you a very happy and safe holiday season. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks to you guys.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasachek on the Buckmaster Show, and our thanks to Mark Evans and Jimmy Bogle for joining in the questioning today. Jimmy and Mark will be sticking around. We have lots to talk about on our Friday roundtable. Been a very busy news week. We'll try to get to the highlights right after this. Stay with us. SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington.
The House has approved a $1 trillion spending bill funding cabinet agencies and keeping the federal government in business. A Senate vote could come this evening. This measure replaces a stopgap bill that expires at midnight. The White House says the last American prisoner in Iraq, the Hezbollah commander, has been turned over to Iraq. The individual has been linked to the Iranian government as well as to a brazen raid in which four American soldiers were abducted and killed in 2007. A Pennsylvania judge who will decide if two Penn State administrators can be tried on perjury charges has halted their preliminary hearing so he can read their grand jury testimony. Wall Street, the Dow is down about 30 points, while the NASDAQ is trading 10 points higher, the S&P currently unchanged. More details at srnnews.com.
Do you
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including five major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
1234 on the Buckmaster Show. Welcome back. We are on KVOI AM 1030 in the Voice Network. Each Friday afternoon, we present the Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists sounding off on the week's top stories. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable, Jimmy Bogle, editor of the Tucson Weekly, and Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. And we're delighted that the Buckmaster Show is available for 24/7 anytime, anywhere, listening on three websites, including Mark Evans's TucsonCitizen.com. And we enjoy you and please join us in the conversation. 790-2040. Want to remind you the Buckmaster Show and the Friday Roundtable is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at splendidoaz.net. Mark, let's begin with you. Some of the areas perhaps we didn't get a chance to cover with Councilman Kasacek, all three of us, Jimmy Bogle, myself, and you, we all came prepared with lots of questions, but we didn't get a chance to get into all of them. What did we miss?
Steve's good at running out the clock on his answers. I wanted to ask him what he thought of the latest mess with downtown, which is this the city's deal with Gadsden Company. Quickly for listeners, there was a piece of city property on the west side that the city sold for about $250,000 to a company called Gadsden Company, owned by Jerry Dixon, who then flipped it for a couple of million to a Chicago-based company in order to build some senior housing. And then some of the profit was supposed to be placed into an escrow account to pay for infrastructure improvements, public infrastructure improvements around the property. And now, according to a couple of stories in the Arizona Daily Star, it was promoted as this great deal for the city, but just like anything that has to do with downtown, it's now got this taint on it because Gadsden Company has not paid one of its subcontractors. It, according to its partner in senior housing, it's wrongly dipped into the escrow fund to use funds, and it looks like Gadsden's not going to live up to its end of the deal. Although Jerry Dixon says that he absolutely will in the long run, it's just the little short-term hiccups going on, and that somehow Tucson does business differently here than they do in Chicago, which is saying quite a bit.
Don't knock my hometown.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Jimmy Bogle.
Now I'm hungry for a hot dog for some reason. I wanted to tweak one thing you said there real quick, Mark, and that's the taint that anything downtown happens. I think there's a lot of great stuff happening downtown that in spite of the city a lot of times.
Anything that's associated with the city is tainted. I would agree. There's a lot of great stuff going downtown. In fact, downtown is succeeding in spite of the city.
Yes, but you're absolutely right. When it comes to deals that the city signs with developers to get something done, it seems like there is a pattern of these deals just not happening, and it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out, and I hope the fact that this has gotten some light shown on it that, you know, it might change things a little.
A couple of big stories of the week, one of them certainly happening early in the week. The U.S. Supreme Court will review Arizona's tough law on illegal immigration. This, of course, is SB 1070. Mark Evans, this has all sorts of implications because other states, namely, I think, South Carolina, Utah, Alabama. To name a few, have moved forward on the Arizona model of SB 1070. So it'd be very interesting to see what the courts say.
Well, and there's been challenges in every one of those states as well. So on the one hand, I'm not surprised that the court wanted to take a case when there's this much division, especially with the appellate courts. But I'm really surprised that they took this case because it's a preliminary injunction. Susan Bolton, the federal judge in Phoenix, hasn't even ruled on the legality of the law yet or the constitutionality. She only imposed the preliminary injunction to prevent the law from going into effect. Now, she did that with the assumption that you only impose an injunction like that and the presumption that the people who are seeking it, which is the federal government, would succeed. But I was also surprised that the Supreme Court took it because Justice Kagan has to conflict herself out of it because she worked on when she was Solicitor General of the United States, she worked on the lawsuit that was filed against the state. So that means if the court breaks down the way it usually does, liberal and conservative, they're going to kiss their sister on this. It's going to be 4-4, and, you know, we won't really get any clarity that everybody wants. So, I'm not surprised they took it on the one hand. On the other hand, I am, and I don't think it's really going to come to much.
Well, actually, I don't know, because, I mean, a lot of the court decisions have been 5-4 in favor of the more conservative side, and this would make it 5-3. And I think this could be an absolutely huge deal. Imagine what could happen in terms of the protests, in terms of the Hispanic community being up in arms, if indeed the Supreme Court comes in and in a 5-3 decision or whatever the decision may be, says, yes, this is a constitutional law. That'll be huge.
SB 1070, of course, has been kind of the point of contention. As you say, Jimmy, there could be all sorts of demonstrations. And it also comes – this decision to go to the Supreme Court comes at a time when the arrests of illegal border crossers, that was announced this week, down for the seventh straight year.
Yeah, a lot of things are responsible for that. Some people say that it's the increased law enforcement presence on the border. Also, it's the economy. The number of arrests are down because the number of people coming across is way, way down, like almost, I believe, half, if not less than half of what it was before the economy got bad. So, you know, the one thing I think it's important to point out, though, is, well, the number of people who are crossing is down and the number of people who are being arrested is down. The number of people who are dying in the desert, something that Margaret Regan, our arts editor, is very passionate about and wrote a great book, The Death of Yoseline, discussing some of those stories. That number hasn't gone down. So this doesn't mean that anything is solved along the border by any stretch of the imagination. It's an encouraging sign for all sorts of reasons, other than the fact that it's showing the economy is kind of not in a good shape still. But there's still a problem along the border. Let's make that clear.
And still speaking of immigration, Sheriff Joe Arpaio in the news.
Yeah, I mean, it took the federal government, the Justice Department, 3.5 years to come to the same conclusion that the East Valley Tribune came to in 2008, that there was a serious problem in the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office on how they were going about illegal immigration enforcement. You know, there should be no problem that in this country about people wanting to enforce the immigration laws, and that if someone is here illegally and they're caught, that they should be deported back. But it's a very complicated issue. What's happened is that Arpaio has, and others have demagogued this thing so badly that it's become this demonization of illegal immigrants, and then has spread to Latinos in general, in which Latino citizens of this nation are almost to the point where they're having to prove that they are citizens, and that is just flies in the face of the Constitution. It's an outrage, but there's this cavalier attitude in some circles, especially in Arpaio, that, oh, well, that's just the price that you have to pay in order to enforce the laws and scoop up all these illegal immigrants. And I think that this will have an effect. If Arpaio ends up finally going down for this, I think you'll see a ripple effect where you'll finally see a moderation of the illegal immigrant hysteria and possibly come to a more reasonable decision about how to solve our legal immigration problem. So I'm encouraged that this is finally going forward. But I think it's going to be a pretty brutal fight over the next couple of months while Arpaio and his political allies double down on this issue.
I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens if Joe Arpaio does stick around and does keep up running for re-election, because he's up for election this coming year, because he has been, despite of a lot of criticisms over the years that have come down with Joe Arpaio from the, you know, his little baloney and pink underwear stuff.
For his prisoners.
For
people
in
jail.
To,
you know, the East Valley Tribune story that Mark alluded to, in which they talked about, you know, the fact that Joe Arpaio was going so virulently after illegal immigration that he was actually short-shrifting other issues. And all these other things, he's still been overwhelmingly popular in Maricopa County. And I'm very curious to see that. There's a lot of ifs here, of course, but if he does end up making it to Election Day, if he'll survive it, and if he does survive it, by how much? I mean, what kind of message is that going to send if, you know, he's still elected with 60% of the vote after all of this, which, given his track record in Maricopa County and his popularity even today, wouldn't totally surprise me.
I think the Russell Pierce election may be an indicator that the tide is turning, public sentiment is turning, that yes, illegal immigration is a problem, but the way we're going about solving it is way too harsh. It's violating people's rights. It's on some parts of it, it's racist. And I think you're going to see there be more moderation in it. And I don't think at this point that he would win. I mean, he's already fallen to, because of the Hendershot scandals, his chief deputy and the abuses that he did with that, he fell to just the low 50s. It's still a majority in that poll. But I think with this and some of the details that have come out about the way that they've been treating Latinos in those jails and their attitudes and some of the details in that Justice Department report that released yesterday, I don't see how he survives this.
You're more of an optimist than I am, Mark. I mean, I just don't know.
Well, I've been calling him Teflon Joe for years now, but I'm wondering whether there may be some flaking of the Teflon now.
And I think Russell Pearson, one of the reasons why he did get recalled, although I still think he'd get reelected if he made it, you know, against a Democrat next time. But I still think that Russell Pearce was recalled in part because he'd angered the business community so much. But that's a different topic.
Jimmy Bogle is with us from the Tucson Weekly and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. You're listening to the Friday Reporters Roundtable here on the Buckmaster Show. And gentlemen, we have been interviewing lots of lawmakers and potential lawmakers here on the show over the past few weeks, and they all say the same thing, that immigration is now a back burner issue in this state for the upcoming 2012 legislature. I really wonder if it will be all about the economy, or will immigration pop up again? Your thoughts, gentlemen. Mark?
Well, what we've seen over the last 4 years is that illegal immigration has been a winner. If you're against legal immigration, you hammer illegal immigration, then you know, you're going to win your election. Maybe not now, don't know. But if you look at just for the District 1 race that's shaping up for the county supervisors, a couple of the Republicans, rather than talking about all the problems with the county, one of the first things that they started talking about was illegal immigration. And what does that have to do with county politics and running the county? So I don't see it going away. I don't know.
You're talking about the race for the seat that will be vacated by Ann Day.
Right. So, I don't know about back burner, but it will be less important than the economy for sure.
Well, I think you can't really separate the two. I mean, the two are so intertwined that the fact that, you know, illegal immigrants and legal immigrants for that matter, and people just coming across for the day to shop are a big part of our economy. And so I don't think you can separate the two. And I don't think, unless the day comes that there's two things, number one, comprehensive immigration reform, and two, comprehensive immigration reform that works, that day will not come that immigration isn't a front burner issue in Arizona.
It wouldn't be a Friday Reporters Roundtable if we didn't do an update on redistricting. And we have talked about it every Friday here, and I know that it can sound like inside baseball, but it is so important because it's going to really depend on these where our lawmakers will be running. And I guess we're going to get some final maps, Jimmy, pretty soon.
They're hoping to have them out by Christmas, because after these maps are finalized, they've got to go to the Department of Justice and get approved. And then, of course, you know, they've got to survive all of the court challenges, which, given the drama involving the IRC this year, I think are inevitable. But these are a big deal. I mean, I actually live in a part of Tucson that could swap over where I would go from having Raul Grijalva as my congressperson to having Gabrielle Giffords, or, of course, whoever is the next congresspeople are from those districts. Mm-hmm. So this is a big deal. I mean, this affects who is going to be representing you in Congress. And I think that, yes, it is inside baseball, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. Bill, but people, if you're interested in the well-being of your community and you're not following what's going on with these maps, you really need to start doing that.
And the maps that raised all the ire with Republicans that were proposed, especially the legislative maps, have been tweaked a little bit by the commission, and they are now debating those changes. But I think we're seeing the final maps right now. And I think those are the ones that are going to go to the Justice Department, and then the lawsuit will be filed shortly after that.
Optimistic. We keep hearing about competition perhaps lining up for congressman against Congressman Raul Grijalva. Any thoughts on that, Jimmy or Mark?
Well, it's interesting that he's got two primary opponents now in the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. which I'm not sure where that's coming from. Some, I think, it's because that he's too liberal, and some because he's not liberal enough, which seems strange, seeing as how he's the leader of the progressive movement in the Congress. But it means he's going to have to spend some money to get out of his own primary and can't sit on his war chest to combat whoever becomes the Republican nominee, and that could be a problem for him.
People are smelling blood in the water. I mean, everyone thought, including myself, that Raul Grijalva had pretty much one of the safest seats around until, lo and behold, SB 1070, his call for a boycott, and boom, it became very clear that there is no such thing as a completely safe seat. And so I think people just seeing opportunity and are jumping for it.
Okay, and our programming note, we will have State Representative Vic Williams. You were talking about the race for supervisor in District 1 as Ann Day vacates that seat. We will have Vic Williams on the program on Monday on the Buckmaster Show. Mark and Jimmy, I want to wish you both a great holiday season, and thank you for your service here on the program. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome. Have a Merry Christmas.
Thanks a lot.
1250. Happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you for remembering. 1250 on the Buckmaster Show. Matt Russell is next.
Cleaning out the garage.
Not exactly. I'm trying to find Grandma Lynn's clock for what it's worth.
For what?
What's it worth with a Z? It's an antiques appraisal fundraising event on February 12th at the Doubletree Hotel. You can bring in two items, have them appraised by those famous appraisers, you know, you see on TV.
Famous appraisers?
Yeah, you know, Colleen Fesco, Michael Flanagan.
How much does it cost and what can I have appraised?
A $60 ticket, woman, admits two people and you can bring up to two items. You can bring furniture, jewelry, china, rugs, paintings, whatever. The proceeds go to help children in need in Tucson.
Where can I buy tickets?
You can buy your tickets online at whatsitworth.org. That's what's it with a Z. Wait, where are you going?
I'm going to find my two items for What's It Worth. I love Michael Flanagan, and it's for a good cause. See you there.
Proceeds benefit Assistance League of Tucson.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it. But let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit pyramidfcu.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
Regardless of the season, when I hear that music, I think of Twisting and Shouting out by the pool, and I also think of the culinary cruiser himself, Matt Russell. Matt, I know in preparation for the holiday party tonight at the award-winning Russell Communications, the culinary cruiser has dramatically dropped his caloric intake this week. By several thousand calories a day in preparation for tonight's event. And I know you went overboard by showing up at Russell Communications in the Santa suit already and meeting with some of your blue chip clients.
You know, I've been on a fast for about a week and a half getting ready for this big event tonight. I mean, the Santa suit is just falling right off of me, Bill.
We have lots of activities going on this weekend. What's this about a winter wine tasting?
Yeah, our friends over at Catavinos Wine Shop and Tasting Room, which of course is over there on Alvernon, just south of Fort Lowell, they have handpicked six wines, Bill, that are just perfect for this time of year, the big reds, the bold wines, heartwarming wines. And for only $10, your listeners can enjoy a flight of these six wines paired alongside some wonderful cheese and crackers. And that's only going to be, as I said, $10. Now, if you buy at least a bottle of wine, you're going to get that tasting for $8. And if you do what I do and buy the wine by the case, you're not going to pay a thing for that tasting. Again, that's today and tomorrow from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Catavinos.
Could you give me a location on Catavinos?
Yeah, that's 3063 North Alvernon, just south of Fort Lowell on the west side of the street.
How about some blues and brews?
You're always looking for great and innovative brunch ideas, and this Sunday at Lowe's Ventana Canyon Resort is the famous Blues, Brews, and Barbecue Brunch. Traditional and not-so-traditional brunch fare, including locally crafted beers and favorites from the grill, only $36, and you're going to get live music from the Tucson Jazz Society, a real hip and casual way to relax on a Sunday. That's a Sunday brunch at Lowe's Ventana Canyon Resort from 11 to 2.
You know, I'm in the mood for a little Polynesian.
Yeah, you know, I always get joked on this show. I always get teased about the Hawaiian shirt that I always wear every Friday. And this time of year, I think, wouldn't it be great to be on the Hawaiian Islands, you know, this particular week? But we can save some money on airfare because this Sunday at the Contiki is going to be the Ernie Menahuni Polynesian Review and Dinner. Now, get this. World-renowned Hawaiian singer Ernie Menahuni is going to be back in Tucson, and his show always gets rave reviews. And you know, when you pair that up with Contiki's authentic island cuisine and some inspired regional cocktails, you're really in for a treat. Reservations are going to go fairly quickly, so I want to make sure your listeners call ahead. The number 323-7193 for the Ernie Menahuni Polynesian Dinner and Review at Contiki on Sunday.
I have a feeling there'll be a few Mai Tais floating around that evening.
Yeah, Mai Tai madness at the Contiki, you know, going back many, many years, always a Russell favorite, you know, the Scorpions and the Tortugas, always wonderful, as I said, inspired, innovative cocktails. And I think, you know, Contiki is quite unique because you don't really have a lot of places around town that really do authentic island cuisine. And when you think about some of the great things you can do with shrimp and coconut and teriyaki, and they just have a wonderful food program over there. We just love the Contiki.
And the holiday parade is coming up downtown this weekend. So if folks want to go downtown and welcome in Santa Claus.
Yeah, absolutely. Santa has been busy, making his way around all kinds of great destinations here in Tucson. Just enough time to check the list and make the list and check it twice and get back up to the North Pole in time for New Year, Christmas Eve.
What's on the menu tonight at the Russell Communication Holiday Party?
Well, you know, speaking of our good friends over at Santa Canyon Resort, yeah, we're going to be at the Flying V Bar and Grill for the Russell Public Christmas Party. Please stop by and say hello, and we're just going to have a great time. I mean, the opportunities are endless when you have 10 foodies sitting around a table enjoying wonderful food, wonderful beverages. What a great way to end the year.
Well, toast one for me while you're at there, and say hello to everybody, and congratulations. What a wonderful year for the Russell Communication Group with the awards that you've been bringing in. Great job, Matt.
Thanks so much, and a big Buckmaster birthday to you, Bill.
Thank you so much, Matt Russell with Weekend Watch. Have a great one.
You too, thanks.
The birthday edition of the Buckmaster Show has been presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by our friends at Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants Mike Flowers and the gang over at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at FlowersRieger.com. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, remember, a team can be two of us, and that's what it is. Producer Rosemary Brandt and I, Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and a very safe weekend. We will see you back here Monday, noon to 1 on KVOI, AM 1030, The Voice and The Voice Network. Have a great weekend.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.